Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement today. And we're going to zero in to begin with about moisture. Moisture trapped in walls can lead to all kinds of problems. And we'll be taking a look at a building method that can greatly reduce moisture buildup. And my guest today, John Freiberger. He is a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in evaluating older homes. And he'll tell us about rain screens and, of course, answer your home improvement and repair questions. So I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're having a moisture problem with your home. Maybe you have some questions about remodeling. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be back, Larry.
You know, when Jill first said to me, well, John wants to talk about rain guards, that I first thing I thought of were those things that you put on top of your roof or along the edge of your roof to keep the leaves out. But that's not they're not gutter guards that we're talking about.
Not.
We went online to look at rain screens, and they look pretty neat. How do they work? What do they do?
Well, a lot of us have rain screens on our house, and we don't know it.
Okay.
Actually, if you've got vinyl siding, you sort of have you've got a rain screen system. If you look at the bottom of your vinyl siding, you'll see a bunch of little holes. I mean, about every 2-3 feet, there's a little hole in the siding. Why? Because water gets through your vinyl siding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Comes in the joints. It's got to drain out. So your vinyl siding is not a rain barrier. It's a rain screen. Now, think of the screen on your screen porch, Larry.
Okay.
Rains like heck. 99% of the water stays outside because the screen catches it.
Yeah.
But you know that porch floor does get wet, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same thing with vinyl siding. It's the same thing with brick. It's the same thing with wood siding. It's the same thing with cement siding. All exterior cladding, and we're going to define cladding as whatever's on the outside of your house.
You know, okay.
Your brick.
Brick or whatever.
Brick, wood, vinyl, steel, aluminum, whatever. That's all cladding. But all cladding is basically a rain screen. None of it is a barrier except sort of really, really old 3-width or 2-width thick masonry walls.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
So the lesson that we got to take...
That'd be an old wall, by the way.
Well, it would be, but we do have some. But lesson number one that everyone needs to take away, Larry, is cladding leaks. No matter what you have on the outside of your house, it leaks. So, not a lot. But it's a rain screen, which means some water gets through. Now, if you've got a brick house, decently built brick house, what you have in back of that brick is a 1-inch airspace. And that airspace is basically an area where the water that goes through that brick can run down, and then if your house is correctly built, and it probably isn't, there are weeps at the bottom where the water can run out. So your brick is a rain screen. We have a drainage area. Now, in back of that drainage area, we're supposed to have a thing called the drainage plane, which doesn't make a lot of sense, so let's define it. Basically, the drainage plane is something that water doesn't go through, so the water drains down it. Mm-hmm. So if you have on an old house with brick, maybe it's tar paper, right? So the water comes through the brick, hits the tar paper, can't go through the tar paper, it drains down. Modern houses may have house wraps of different sort. They may have one of the new specialized exterior waterproof claddings. It might be blue or pink Dow styrofoam with a joints tape. But all those things are the drainage plane. So the drainage plane is the thing down which the water runs without getting into your house. If you lack a drainage plane, your house at some point is going to get wet. And we are seeing houses, the last really bad one I saw was a 7-year-old house where the masonry did not drain correctly. Their daughter had to move out of her bedroom because the mold was so bad she was getting sick. And when we opened the walls, we had to replace all of the sheathing and some of the studs after 7 years due to the lack of a correct drainage plane. So the reason I want to do this program is that we want people who are building or remodeling, and a lot of houses when you remodel, you know, I really like people to take the siding off their houses, Larry, when they're re-siding, so that we can add insulation. We can add an air barrier. We can add a drainage plane. And then we put our new cladding on, and we've got a really good house, even if that house was built in, you know, in 1850.
Yeah, there we go. Well, that's interesting. How expensive, you know, is this an expensive proposition we're talking about here?
No. The way that we usually do it, now, if you look at the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, or if you're in Minnesota or Illinois, if you look at the International Residential Code, look up masonry, you'll see it's required by code.
Okay.
The masonry, you are supposed to have your cladding, your brick, you're supposed to have your drainage plane, and you're supposed to have your weeps and your flashing to get the water out of the wall. Now, if you look at the, again, if you look at Wisconsin or the International Code, it mentions flashing. And it defines flashing as metal or anything else that takes water out of the drainage plane and sends it to the outside. That's also required by code. The problem that we have is that builders don't build a code, and the jurisdictions having authority in many cases, not in all, but in many cases, don't enforce the code. Sometimes it's because they're not there when it's going up. You know, they come to the house and they go, well, they can't see it. So, yeah, to get back to your question, is it expensive?
Yeah.
It is not expensive. In most cases, it's the default setting. If you want to build the house to code, you need to do it correctly. Now, there's money and there's money. Pay me now or pay me more later. I get called out a lot because people have put really nice cedar siding on their house. And after 4 years, they go, John, I want to sue somebody. But there's a statute of repose, but at least come out, tell me what went wrong. I look at it and go, well, you put cedar siding over the top of foam insulation. The foam insulation trapped the moisture. The backside of the cedar siding wasn't sealed. The backside expanded. It cupped. It cracked. It's falling off your house and it's 10 years old. Now, how much would have it cost to instead put half-inch or 3/8-inch wood strips and then nail that cedar to the wood strips with the drainage plane in back of it and a drainage way there so that cedar could have dried to both sides? Well, it probably would have cost him, in many cases, $15,000 to $20,000 less than what they're spending now.
Oh. John Freiberger, our guest today, started out here talking about rain screens, but we'll take other home improvement questions as well. The number, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. So when you're going to be doing some of this work, you working with a contractor, that's something you need to be asking that contractor.
You need to be asking, and none of this stuff is rocket science. As we mentioned in the commercial, it's been around since Vitruvius's 10 books of architecture, which were published before Christ died. So this has been around. We go to Rome and we look at the ruins. And we look at buildings that are, there's a lot of ruins, but there's buildings like the Pantheon that are still in operation.
Yeah.
But they were built correctly. These guys understood how to get rid of water and how to manage it. And, Italy's a little bit drier, but Italy's a tough climate because it's hot, it's cold, it's rainy, it's dry. So it's one of these really mixed climates. But yet, we've known for 2,000 years how to do this correctly.
And yet, sometimes we don't do it anyway. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. Mary in Milwaukee has a question. I don't think it relates to that, but let's go to her. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I am going to replace some carpeting. I had squat carpeting recently. I unfortunately had two cats that were sick and peed all over it. I have not been able to get the smell out, even calling in special carpet cleaning specialists. And I've been told to look at vinyl plank flooring. And I don't know what it is exactly, but my question is, what are your thoughts on it if you've had any exposure to it being used anywhere?
Yes, I've had exposure to the whole thing, Mary, including the cat issue. I helped a friend who bought a condominium that had been overrun with cats, and they didn't always get to the litter box. Mary, how old is your house?
I'm in a condo, and it is I'm going to say somewhere between 12 and 15 years old.
Okay.
And I moved in 4 years ago and replaced the carpeting.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new.
Sure.
But it's ruined. It's ruined.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, we have to start at the bottom. So once you take this carpet out, you're probably going to find oriented strand board floor sheathing. Possibly you'll find plywood, but most likely on a house or condo 12 to 15 years old, you're going to find OSB. Oriented strand board is made of chip popple, the same thing that we make Kleenex and paper towels out of. So in other words, it's absorbent. So you're going to have to take the carpet out, but you're probably going to have somebody come and locate the stains on the floor and seal them. If you don't seal them, you're still going to have a problem, even when you put new flooring in. So make sure that whoever you're talking to is willing to come in, and they may have to do some sanding. There's places where the OSB may actually increase in size when where it's gotten wet. But all of the stains need to be sealed so that that smell does not come back at you. Now, as far as the plank flooring, one of the types of flooring is called LVT, luxury vinyl tile. Looks like wood. Some of it just snaps together and just sits there. Some of it is glued down. Some of it's glued at the edges. I think it's a wonderful product. You have to buy the good stuff. So don't necessarily go to the big box. You'll go to a good flooring center in your area that specializes and take a look at them. You're going to find all kinds of colors, all kinds of wood patterns, all kinds of everything. But it's a very good quality product. It's quite reasonably priced. And it's something where if your cats do a little problem, you can wipe it up. If you have a problem, you can unsnap it. You can clean underneath it and seal it, and you can put it back down. So it's a very good quality modern product.
There you go. So you're in good shape there, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. And let's take some more calls here. Let's go to Linda in Wausau next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. My husband and I live in a home in the woods, and it's got white steel siding. And my husband, we moved here about 15 years ago, and he has refused to wash the house with a power washer because he's worried that the moisture is going to get down between the siding and the insulation and cause a problem. So we've been washing it with just a standard hose with a standard nozzle and some cleaning products. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on power washing as opposed to just more gentle washing to prevent the moisture issue.
Certainly. Obviously, power washing is going to have more pressure. We know that steel siding is a rain screen. Even when you're using your hose or it's raining, some water is going through. So what would be nice is if you would be able to... You can pop that siding loose. It's not like vinyl where you can do it easily. And see what you have in back. Do you have a good quality house wrap? Is it in good shape? Do you have tar paper? What do you have in back? If you do have a good quality drainage plane, then power wash away. If you don't, well, then you're probably going to have to stick with the hand washing and making sure that you're using a gravity spray so we're not pushing too much water. So what we have to do is, unfortunately, we have to identify the drainage plane, which we can't see without doing a little bit of deconstruction. But maybe call local siding contractor. See if he'll just pop off a couple pieces so you can take a look, see what you have. The best place to look is low on the wall. Sometimes you can find a place where the overlap between the pieces of siding isn't too great, unless this is a seamless steel where the piece runs the whole length of the house. And then with a flashlight, you can gently pull it out and look in back and see what you see back there. It might be blue foam, which is fine as long as the joints are taped. It might be Tyvek or Henry house wrap. It might be a tar paper. But do a little discovery first, and then you'll be able to make a more informed decision.
There you go. And that little bit of time now could save a lot of time down the road.
We keep repeating that, don't we? Time and money.
There you go, Linda. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Maria in Madison, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Hello. We own a house here in Madison, and it was built in 1923. It has very low height basement ceilings, and I'm just wondering, I never heard here, I've been trying to do a bit of research of lowering the basement ground. It seems to be very popular in the East Coast, but I haven't been able to find anyone that would lower the basement floor. Is this done over in Wisconsin? Sorry, as you can tell, myself and my husband are rough. not locals.
I had it done in my house in Madison.
That's right. Actually, Maria, we've been doing it in the Madison area for over 100 years. I go into a lot of old stone houses in the 1860s, and what used to be the crawl space is now the basement. So it's been done all the time. The type of soils you have and the exact the way the house is laid out does make a bit of a difference. And there are contractors in town who specialize in that sort of work. We have a website now. And the only reason we have the website is to have information. So if you're interested in rain screens in this program, you can go to Educated Homeowner and type that in, and that's going to take you to our website. And we have a contact information there. So if you're looking for a contractor in the Madison area, I would be happy to respond to an email. And those of you who are interested in rain screens can find all kinds of articles on there that talk about the subject of today's program, as well as other useful information.
And give the name again?
Educated Homeowner.
Educated Homeowner.
Yeah, no the, just Educated Homeowner, and it should pop right up.
And Maria, one of the things I found, I don't know how old your house is, mine was a 1906 home, and when we started on this process, we realized there were no footings in that home, so we had to bring in an architect. And we had to put in footings, new footings, sort of at the base of the new floor. And that added a considerable amount of money to the whole process of dropping it down a couple of feet.
Right. And generally, Maria, what we have to do when we are making basements deeper is we try to put a curb inside the basement to retain the soil under the original wall. Yeah. There is a thing called underpinning, which is just awfully expensive, where we go under the existing wall and try to put footings and wall in. But what we probably want to do is more of a curb retention system. So we can't drop all of the basement down, but we can maybe come in a foot or so from the existing walls and drop that.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Maria. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And it is nice to have more headroom down there, but it was at a considerable amount of money. Oh, and also the other reason was the previous owners had cats, and they pretty much lived in the basement, and there was no getting rid of the smell. It could have sealed it, as you suggested earlier. That would have worked, but it chose to lower the basement floor so we had more headroom.
Sealing concrete can be difficult.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Maria. Appreciate the call. Matt in Liberty Pole, we'll get to you in just a minute. Our guest today, John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. His firm, Freiberger & Associates, consults on all kinds of restoration and adaptive reuse of old homes. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Deneau, our producer on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your home today, talking home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg in Madison. Great to have John back, and thank you for listening in. All our lines are filled, so we'll go back to the phones and to Matt in Liberty Pole next. Hi, Matt.
Hi. We've got an older farmhouse actually built the same year as Larry's. It was 1906, and been remodeling it one room at a time over the last 17 years. Some of the remodel jobs have just been paint and a few cosmetic things, and other ones, I gutted the rooms right down to the studs. My question is, I did put a vapor barrier in the rooms that I gutted, which is probably about a third of the rooms in the house. I'm wondering if in a couple of years I'd like to re-side the house. Is that existence of vapor barriers on some walls and not on others going to mess up whatever system I plan to use for re-siding? And do you have any recommendations on that?
A couple of recommendations. If we insulate, we really need to put in vapor barriers. So I'm glad you've done that. And we find that in the Department of Interior Guidelines for Historic Restoration. So if you continue to gut, continue to add vapor barrier. Now, the vapor barrier you're putting up was probably the thin plastic film, the visqueen. There are also liquid applied vapor barriers, which are basically a fortified acrylic latex paint, and you can tint them. If you simply go online and Google HUD certified vapor barrier paints, they should come up. I know Glidden's had one, I think was called Insulade. So the nice thing about this paint is that the paint will stop vapor from going through the walls. Now, The problem is we still have wall penetrations, such as your outlets, switches, etc. But you can put those little foam air seals on, so that helps. And I would do that whether you're siding or not. The problem that we have with these old houses is that house is probably balloon framed, and its lateral stability is really based upon the nails going through the sheathing. And if we get condensation in those walls and those nails start rusting, the houses can get awfully loose. So I think next time you paint, just think about using vapor barrier paint on the inside and do a little bit of air sealing, and that will really help. As far as a long-term planning, I don't know how much insulation you were able to put into those walls. They're probably old 2x4 walls, so if you put in bats, you're looking at R11. But the more insulation you can put on the exterior of that house, the less important the vapor barrier becomes. What the Cold Climate Housing Lab in Alaska has found is in Wisconsin, they've done the calculations for all over the U.S., in Wisconsin, if we can get 60% of the insulation on the outside, which in Wisconsin is going to be perhaps R12 to R18, depending upon where you live, the interior of the wall is going to be so warm that you're never going to get any condensation, so you don't have to worry about the vapor barrier. So a lot of people, like my friend Joel Stilbrick, says, let's get rid of vapor barriers. Let's just insulate correctly so we never have condensation in the walls. So do a little bit of research. Sounds like you're a couple of years away from a siding plan. You know, think about our rain screen program. And do a little bit of research, so when you do it, it's great. For now, if you're painting, go ahead and use vapor barrier paint. Very little additional cost, maybe an extra $5 a gallon.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Matt, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim in Mauston, turning to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry and John. I painted my deck about a year ago using a Woodman's stain and deck paint, I guess, and within the first couple months, I did it, like I say, a year ago, and after it snowed and got a little cover on it, when I was shoveling the snow off, the paint was scraping off, and I'd power washed and used the remover that you do before you refinished it. But what type of recourse do I have, or is this natural? My neighbor did her deck about the same time, and her deck is perfect right now, too. So She did not have the same problem.
Jim, let me ask you a couple of quick questions. First, what type of wood is your deck composed of?
It was treated pine.
Treated pine, okay.
It's probably been there 15 years.
So the pine was well dried out, but the problem with the pine is, you know, as it dries, you know, we pressure treat this with a lot of water and a lot of chemicals. You know, your stuff probably has copper arsenate in it. So then we end up with all this fine cracking. And how do we bridge that with paint? It is really, really difficult. So I'm not sure you really have any recourse. I think if they misadvertised and said this is good for old decks, well, they were probably wrong. What I'm going to suggest you do is go to Forest Products Laboratory here in Madison. So just Google Forest Products Lab. They are going to have dozens and dozens and dozens of articles on paint and paint failure. In fact, I've got links to that up on Educated Homeowner, because the Forest Products Lab paint stuff is so good. They've been testing paint for 50, 60 years. So they know a whole lot more than I do. So let me refer you to them. And what you may want to take a look at is look for a product that is non-layering. So something that if moisture has to work its way out, it can work its way out. It doesn't blister and pop paint off because the paint is sealing it. I don't think you can really seal this stuff. All right. Well, you can't 100% seal it. There's always going to be pores and cracks. So let's try to put on some sort of preservative that doesn't layer. But again, go to Forest Products Lab, do a little bit of research there. I haven't researched deck paint there recently, and there's probably some newer articles that I don't know about, but that you can find easily.
There you go. Good luck, Jim. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Noah in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Noah.
Hi, thank you. I just dug the basement on our new home this last Tuesday, and I'm doing exterior insulation foam board, and as well as underneath the basement floor. And my question is, between EPS foam and XPS foam, if you have any experience between the two types, I've seen some conflicting information with studies online talking about moisture absorption and losing some R value over the years as that goes, being exposed to the moisture.
Right. No, I would only use an extruded type of foam. You want to have something that's closed cell, not open cell. If it is open cell, it can gain moisture. Once it's gained moisture, you start losing your R value very, very quickly. So make sure that it is closed cell no matter what it is. It could be a polyisocyanate. I mean, there are all kinds of things, even urethane-based foams out there. But take a real good look at it. I'm assuming you're putting on foundation waterproofing?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Rubberized spray.
Right. Okay. And you should be sure you consult with the person or the firm who is putting that on, because you're probably getting a 10 or 20-year warranty. They are probably going to have a specification as to the type of foam you use, and they may say that they want you to use an extruded poly that has the little drain grooves in the back, so that if we get water between the spray-on and the foam, it can drain down to the bottom to your wash gravel and then your water collection system. So be sure to check with your contractor, because that is an important warranty to have if you ever do have a problem in the future.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Noah. Appreciate the call. And on to Barbara in Verona. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. We have a historic stone house that we have exposed interior walls, so that's the same interior as the exterior. And I was wondering if there is a vapor barrier product that we could put on the interior stone wall that doesn't create any pigment or any surface.
Real simple answer, no. And you shouldn't anyway. The thing is, your stone wall dries in two directions. In the winter, when your house is heated and it's cold outside, the thermal drive becomes the vapor drive. So it pushes the moisture out of the wall to the exterior. In the summer, it may be exactly the opposite, especially on the south side. The wall is wet, and the sun comes out, and we have different temperature gradients going through that wall, and it's shoving that vapor to the interior. Well, if it can't get out on the interior, and you've got things like your second floor joists are let into the walls, the moisture then can gather in things like the tails of those floor joists and rot them off. So you can actually do significant structural damage to your house by adding a vapor barrier to the interior of an old stone house.
Hmm. Does that help you, Barbara?
It does. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, just as this is a total aside, but I'm just reading a book about the history of Milwaukee. And the brick in Milwaukee, when they first started making bricks there, the bricks were quite a different color from the bricks that were the Europeans were used to, and they were a lighter cream color.
That is correct.
And I think it had to do with the water level that permeated the minerals in the brick.
Right. The clays were very different. The same thing with our beautiful Watertown brick from actually not that far from Madison. In Madison, we had these really nice, bright red bricks because we use lake clay often here. So very often, we can actually identify where a brick came from simply by looking at it.
Yeah, they're really interesting. Let's go to, at least to me, let's go to John in Minocqua next. Hi, John.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I'm with the American Legion Post 89, Minocqua, Wisconsin. We have a water problem in our basement, in our heavy rains and that. It's leaking into our basement and things like that. We hired a company from Wakefield, Michigan, and they plan on jackhammering the floor and on the outside and laying what he kind of called, I thought, kind of a rain gutter in there that would collect the water and dump into our sump. Into our sump pump, and that would pump it out. Is that a correct method of doing that?
Yes, John. Interior water collection systems are it's a belt, but it's not belt and suspenders. I mean, the best is unfortunately way too expensive, which is to dig up the exterior, waterproof it, put exterior and interior drain tiles in. But, you know, you're a nonprofit, and the Legion isn't exactly rich, unless Post 89 is different. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different companies and franchises that put in these interior water collection systems. They work quite well. If you have leaks coming down the walls, there's ways that they can put a patch over that and direct it down. They can collect wall water. They can contract. They can break up hydrostatic head pressure. So it is a tried and true method. Make sure that you have identified to the contractor every single problem you can think of. And make sure that they are giving you a cure that you and your brothers in the Legion are comfortable with. And then make sure that you have a good warranty as well.
There you go. Good luck with that, John. Appreciate your call. And Gary in Wausau, it's your turn.
Hi. I got a question, too. We had our basement done like that, and we got good results with it. The only thing that I suggest that this contractor didn't do for us, we had cracks in the floor from the water, you know, probably hydrostatic pressure or whatever, and when he put his wings in out from the middle, he went all the way around the perimeter and the middle, and he ran it out to the perimeter again, you know, from the centers, and he didn't go over those cracks. And now I'm still having a little bit of moisture coming up. Not much. It's not bad. But I can see, you know, the concrete is wet there. So I just want to give a shout out that I think that's the way to go. You know, make sure that they put those interior, you know, laterals that go out along those, if you have cracks in the floor.
Right. Gary, that's a good point. So much of this is soil dependent. And, you know, Wausau and Minocqua, who knows? I mean, you may be in your house in Wausau very close to the underlying stone, and so that your hydrostatic head pressure is really all over under the floor, whereas somebody else may be in more gravelly soils and they only have it on the edge. But good advice for John in Minocqua is that when they're doing the digging, and this is why we said make sure you know every problem. Yeah. If you do have cracks in the middle of the floor with efflorescence and stains, yeah, bring that up to the contractor, because you may be right. We may have to do the Gary system, or maybe Minocqua Legion Post can just do the perimeter system. This is why we always say investigate first.
Yeah.
Don't pay twice.
Thank you very much, Gary. That's good advice. Appreciate your call. Vern and Stanley up next. Hi, Vern.
Oh, thanks for letting me on. See, my daughter rented this apartment in the town right by Stanley. And what they did, they put a new carpet in, but they put commercial glue on a wooden floor and a commercial carpet on top of that. And you could not stand the smell. She didn't live in it. We tried, even after 6 months, you couldn't stand the smell in there. It killed some of her plants. And I called the legislators and all the other people, and nobody ever did anything about it. So should they have even put, you know, commercial glue and carpet on a wooden floor? And what do you do about it? Take out the whole floor?
Well, I think the first thing before we do anything, Vern, is we need to figure out what's going on.
Now, yeah, we had the professional carpet cleaner guys come there and said, yeah, they should not have used this much glue. It never is going to dry.
Maybe. What we need to do is we need to find a home inspector or a hygienist who actually can come in and take air samples. And they're going to look at volatile organic compounds, VOCs. So what you probably can start by doing is going to the two home inspector websites that I recommend, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors and the American Society of Home Inspectors. So what you can do, Vern, is you can find somebody who is maybe not too far from Stanley, because, you know, everybody's got charge to drive, and then find somebody who has the capacity to come and collect air for you. Now, they're not going to do the test. They're going to send the little tubes and things off to a lab. But let's find out what's in the air. This is something that could be something unrelated. We've had houses where we were getting old oil fumes from leaking tanks. So for the health of your daughter, let's get this identified before we do anything. Let's get that done in the next 2 weeks. And then you'll have a little bit more idea of what you're doing. And obviously, this is an apartment, so this is the landlord's problem. And, you know, if this is something that is hazardous, you may want to take a look at getting out of a lease.
So the American Society of Home Inspectors is one.
And WAHI, the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, is another. The nice thing about people who join professional organizations, Larry, is they're spending extra money. They're spending a couple hundred dollars to join a professional organization. They are subscribing to the code of ethics of that organization. So generally, they are the inspectors who are a bit more educated, and they're the ones who care. They care a bit more, and they have a higher standard.
So there you go, Vern. Thank you very much for calling. Let us know down the road how that turns out. Appreciate your call. Ken in Dodgeville up next. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So I have a ranch house with a two-car garage, and under the two-car garage, they excavated and put spancrete down. And so on the wall, those foundation wall, which is immediately underneath where the garage door would come down, in the wintertime, we pull the cars in, and the snow melts off, and it runs under the garage, and it goes between the slab for the driveway apron and the foundation, and it seeps into the lower garage. And I've noticed now that some of the concrete has come loose where it seeps in, and I've broken it all out, and they've laid, like, a piece of metal or something in there for extra support. And I'm wondering now, what could I use to replace where that concrete is chipped out to seal that up so that I don't get as much or, you know, eliminate the seepage that comes down through? Because I imagine the frost on the outside is what's keeping the water from draining down through the apron.
So let me see if I've got this right, Ken. So you basically have a two-story garage, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you've got like a back entry or a front entry, and then we've got spancrete to give us a structural floor, and then we've got a garage. We have a garage above the garage.
Correct.
And, of course, our spancrete is has tensioned rebar in it. And if that rebar starts to rust, we're going to have all kinds of interesting structural problems. So you're right to be concerned. As far as exactly what you use, I'm not going to try to diagnose this on the air. I think you probably need to talk to an engineer or an architect in your area. I think you probably need to come up with some sort of butyl flashing system. You're probably going to have to do some revisions to what you have for drainage, because you've identified a really important problem in your house. And without being there, I'm not competent to give you much as far as suggestions. So talk to a design professional in the Dodgeville area, architect or an engineer, or even somebody extremely knowledgeable in concrete construction, and have them come up with some drawings, you know, double check it, think about it a little bit, and let's make sure we get it done right.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Ken, for calling. And Lynn in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about a deck. There is a product that is seals in the cracks. It has the coloration in it, and it also seals it. So didn't know if that was, and it has like three different grades, so fairly fine, and then two, and then a medium grade, and then the one that is quite thick with a lot of sand, perhaps,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Is in it. So I wondered what your opinion of that is.
I can give you a firm maybe.
Okay.
Lynn, it is so dependent upon the current shape of the wood. What exactly are we bridging? Are we getting any kind? Is this deck close to the ground, so we're getting a lot of humidity coming through the bottom of the deck that then pops the paint off the top? So there are so many different things to consider here. I would probably talk to a good painter in your area. You know, good painters, especially the old guys, know an awful lot. And suggest get the cut sheets for the product, have the guy come over, have him look at the deck, have him look under the deck. Where are the sources of our moisture? Generally, moisture is never only on one side. It's usually on four sides. And if we're sealing only one side, we're not keeping all the moisture out. So if that moisture gets in there and we get some sun on it, and that moisture starts coming up and suddenly blisters off this very expensive product, are we going to be in the same shape as some of the other people are complaining about the failed finishes? The other thing I would do, as I mentioned before, is let's go to Forest Products Lab. I believe they actually have a consumer line where I think you can ask them a question. So perhaps ask them a question, and if you get a good answer, go to Educated Homeowner and shoot me an email and educate me a little bit.
Okay, there we go. Thank you very much for calling, Lynn. Our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at home improvement today with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Madison and Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. One open line at 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll turn to Arlene, Arlene in New Berlin. It's your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Larry, and I want to thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is I'm in the basement, and I'm looking at my water pipe, the one that goes into the underneath the ground in the basement.
Yeah.
When we bought the house, there was nothing wrong with the pipe, and at some point, they put the PVC piping in because there's two. It goes into the concrete piece. Anyway, there was a tiny little orange color stain on the floor when we bought the house. This was 2003. As of late, the stain has gotten bigger. Do I need to be concerned? Because I know at some point, I don't know if this house had a, what do they call those things underground that they had years ago?
Septic system?
Yes.
Arlene, how old is your house?
It in the 1950s. I don't know exact date.
All right.
Okay, 1960s. So 50s.
No,
50s. 1950s. Okay.
Yes.
Still, but that's not very old. So what you have is you've got a bunch of newer PVC pipe they've put in the house, and then where it goes out under the foundation, probably to the city sewer now, we have old black cast iron. Is that correct?
The pipe that's coming out from the floor probably is,
because
the one for the bathroom is that way, but then they put in new PVC piping.
Sure.
I don't know how about the big, the smaller stack is 2-inch PVC, 1120 Brista pipe, 1785.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other pipe is about 2 or 3 inches smaller.
Sure.
And then the one for the bathroom is the same thing.
Yeah. If we have rust, it's possible that we have a blister in the cast iron. And that the blisters can occur even on the top of the cast iron due to methane erosion. It's not just water. And the easy thing here is just call your local plumber and have him come take a look at it. If it's a small blister, he'll probably just patch it. If he's worried that there's a bigger problem, he might say, well, we need a sewer cam in here or something. But your local plumber is going to be able to check this out for you very easily. Put your mind at ease or fix it fairly easily, either with a patch or he might snap it off and extend the PVC a little bit.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to Peter in Washburn. Hi.
Hello. I have two questions. The first one is my garage floor, especially in the spring, but even after some of these real heavy rains we've had, the floor itself gets really damp looking. And if I have something setting on the floor and then I pick that up, there's actually standing water on top of the concrete. And I'm wondering, I assume there's no vapor barrier when it was built. And so I was wondering, is there any product that would actually be good enough to seal the concrete to keep the moisture from coming up?
Peter, how old is your house?
The garage is probably about 10 years old.
Only 10 years old.
And as far as I know, it was built by the homeowner himself. The neighbor mentioned that he had helped put it up.
Okay. And what is your drainage situation? Do you have some elevated soils around your house so that we're getting hydrostatic head pressure underneath the garage slab?
Well, the backyard in the spring will have standing water.
Okay. It sounds like what's happening is we're getting some hydrostatic head pressure. We probably don't have a vapor barrier under that garage floor. The other thing we probably have, like most houses 10 years ago, is they backfilled the garage with gravel. And, of course, we know that sand allows capillary action, and gravel is half sand. So what's happening is we've got the soil underneath the garage is wet. The sand is allowing the moisture to come up through capillary action. Garage is a very heavy form of sponge, so it ends up coming through the top mostly as water vapor. But if you took some duct tape and a one-inch square of cling wrap or something and put it on the floor, you'd probably find all kinds of water droplets under that within a few days. So here's the problem with sealing, is we can seal in the direction that the water is headed, not across the direction that it's coming from. So in other words, we see all these things that, like basement sealers, right? We can put them on the inside of the wall. Well, no, we can't, because the hydrostatic head pressure is pushing against it. It's pushing it away from the wall. What we want is a sealer that pushes the water pressure pushes tight against the structure. So if we could seal underneath your garage floor, a sealer would work. I fear that what will happen if you put a sealer on top of the floor is it's just going to blister off on you. So I would take a look at the grading, see if we can get rid of some of that water in your backyard. Let's get a little bit better. Let's get a little bit better control over runoff. Check your gutters, check your downspout extensions. Let's try to dry the soil out, because that is going to be the easiest way to get that garage floor to stop sweating on you.
Yeah, that makes good sense. And that's not a very expensive solution compared to the other solution.
Right, removing the floor and yes.
There you go, Peter. Thank you so much. Let's go to Eileen in Madison. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm referring back to the man who had stained or painted his deck, and then it all peeled off after the winter.
Yep.
The very same thing happened to me. And so my question is this. So if I would have that deck power washed, and it's the same pine-treated deck that he had, would that be okay just not to stain it, just to leave the stain off instead of paying people to come and stain it?
If this is a treated deck, the answer is yes. And you can actually find that in the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code, is it says that exterior wood all needs to be painted to preserve it unless it is a treated wood. So, indeed, you could do that. Now, you are going to get the graying. You are going to get a little bit more wear because you have no finish. But we're just seeing we get paint failure. So, again, I'm going to send a lot of people to Forest Products Lab. There's got to be some things out there that work. Also, you're in Madison, so check with a really knowledgeable paint dealer and tell them exactly what your problem is and see if they've got a clear preservative product that is going to keep the grain from rising and the deck from splintering. Fillet Premier Paint in south side of Madison is about as knowledgeable as they get. He's been doing paint for 40 years. He's always open to questions, so he's a good resource there. And also check the Forest Products Lab and see what they recommend. And we've had so many paint questions, Larry, that I'm going to do some research after this program so that I can get a little bit better answer to Eileen and the rest who have asked these questions rather than sending them elsewhere.
Oh, there you go, Eileen. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Forest Products Lab people are going to wonder, why are we getting all these calls suddenly? Oh, man. Jan in Radisson, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't have a question about paint peeling, if you can believe it.
Yay.
But I bought a little bitty house out here in Radisson. It's a little bitty house, cute as can be, with a real nice unfinished basement. I remember way back when people talking about radon. Is that something that still we need to worry about, or what does that do to you? Can you test it? You never hear, it was kind of, you know, in the news for a long time ago, then you don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah. It has fallen out of the news, Jan, but it's still very much in the real estate industry. Radon is the second largest cause of lung cancer in the United States. As we get more and more people quit smoking, radon is going to become the number one cause of lung cancer in the United States. Almost every house now that is sold has a one-day or two-day radon test. The problem is that's a snapshot. It's not giving us a lot of information. What I would do is go online, find a six-month Alpha Tracker radon test kit, put it in your basement. When the 6 months are up, send it off to the lab and see what you have. Now's a good time to do it. Get some of the air conditioning, get some of the windows open in the fall, some of the heating in the winter, and that'll let you know what your radon is. Remember that in Europe, their level is 2.5 picocuries per cubic deciliter. In the United States, it's 3.8. Go with Europe. It's safer.
Yeah, go with Europe. It's and what's it called again?
A 6-month alpha tracker, or there may be others in alpha tracker, but you want a 6-month test during the heating, the cooling, and the neither season so that you really know what your radon levels are.
Carol emailed to say the solution to the problem of blistering or peeling deck paint is to get a penetrating semi-solid stain. She uses Cabot. It has enough pigment to cover and a large color selection. It lasts for several years. She lives in Minnesota. So penetrating semi-solid stain is what Carol is recommending.
Right. Cabot is a good company, and they do make a whole line of deck stains. And they are one of the more reliable manufacturers.
Our guest today is John Freiberger. His firm, Freiberger & Associates, consults in the restoration and adaptive reuse of old homes and other structures, including designing thermal and air barrier systems to reduce energy consumption. I have a couple of callers online. There's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with John Freiberger. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Madison and Fitchburg. Great to have him along, and thank you again for listening in. Our lines are all filled. The number is 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll go back to the phones now and talk to Dean in Cedarburg next. Hi, Dean. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Now, I don't know if you remember, but back in the mid-70s, there was a push to make houses more energy efficient, and I bought one of those houses that had been insulated back in the mid-70s. The house is built in 1911, and it has foam in the sidewalls. And I heard that some of the people that put that in did a very good job, and some did a not-so-good job, and I don't know the status of that.
Dan, it's going to depend upon the foam. I have a feeling that the foam that was put in your house was probably a urea formaldehyde-based foam. And it became a problem because it outgassed formaldehyde. And the study that was done by the Canadian Home Mortgage Association found that they could still find outgassing of formaldehyde up to 11 years after the foam was put in. So a lot of people got sick from VOCs. The other problem with now that's no longer your problem. It's outgassed.
Yeah.
So the Canadian study said after 12 years you can't find it. But the problem that I found when we have done some deconstructive testing in houses with urea formaldehyde foam is that it shrunk by about 30%. So what you have is you've got part of the wall stud cavity is insulated, and then there's 2 foot not insulated, and then there's more insulated. What I would suggest you do, Dean, is when the temperatures drop in Wisconsin in December or January, is talk to an energy analyst. Go to Focus on Energy. Find a guy that is good at thermal imaging. He will be able to tell you where the walls are well foamed and to what extent gaps exist. It's also possible it was some other sort of foam. I'm not sure when isonine came out. It may have been in the 70s. I think it was in the 80s. So it's entirely possible that the foam is performing. The way to find out is with the X-ray vision of thermal imaging. So do that. The colder it is outside and the warmer it is inside the house, these guys are really going to be able to give you an idea of what's going on.
So again, where does he go?
Focus on Energy. Try to find a guy who's an independent energy analyst, not somebody who is employed by an insulation company, because I always worry about conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
There are still a few independent guys out there.
FocusOnEnergy.com. That's the place to go. Thanks, Dean, for calling. And Bill in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I had my water heater replaced on Tuesday, and ever since, the water pressure has been really low in the shower, bathroom, and the kitchen sink. But the kitchen sprayer has the most power of everything, and that's never even had a problem before with that.
Bill, how old is your house?
1914.
Okay, so you've got steel pipes. So I think what happened is they probably drained some pipes, and you've got a whole bunch of scale that's popped loose. Go to your bathroom sink, unscrew the aerator, and turn on the water. If you've got full water flow, what you've got is you've got a little bit of crud here and there that has gotten into your faucets or into the aerators, and you're just going to have to do a little bit of cleaning, and that should take care of it. I have an old building here in Madison, and every year when the city flushes the water mains, I've got to go to every sink and clean the aerators.
There you go. So that's a simple solution, actually.
Right. Yeah. Can do it yourself.
Yeah.
There are some mixing valves, such as American Standard, that have very fine clearances. And occasionally you've got to unscrew the front for that, and you'll find there's a little piece of rust in there, and that is reducing. Sometimes it reduces the cold. Sometimes it reduces the hot. But in sinks, usually the aerator is going to tell you right away what the nature of your problem is.
There you go, Bill. Thank you for calling. Michelle in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. We have a house that was built in the 50s. It's a story and a half. The lower part of the house is sandstone. The upper part is the cement siding. But in between those two applications, there's a gap that birds are now starting to go into. How do we seal that gap?
The gap? How wide is the gap?
Large enough for a bird to get into. So I don't really know. Probably an
inch or two
at the most. Yeah.
Inch or two? Okay.
Oh, this is really this is a really hard one to diagnose. You're up in Wausau. I think you're going to have to probably talk to a siding contractor. We should have some flashing that is underneath the siding and over the top of that stone to intercept any water that is running down behind the siding. And if that flashing is a metal flashing, that's going to stop the birds from coming in. So we may have to pop off the lowest piece of wood flashing, of wood siding, insert some flashing, put that siding back on. So talk to an exterior siding specialist, have them come over and look at it. I think they'll be able to diagnose it. That way we may be curing two problems, not just the bird, but we may have a water infiltration problem that we can also cure at the same time.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thanks, Michelle, for calling. Maggie in Madison, your turn. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because we bought a house 2 years ago. It's from 1970, and we've got a nice big slope in our backyard. And when it rains in the summer, it's graded really well. We have a totally dry basement. Lately, it's been, you know, the ground will freeze in the winter, and we'll get these heavy rains, and we get water in the basement.
Right.
Is there anything we can do to keep the water from coming in when the ground is frozen?
Yes, and it involves landscaping. This last February, we had, what, 3 to 5 inches of rain on frozen soil? And what happens, Maggie, is because you don't have real good foundation insulation, the soil for 1 or 2 inches outside your house is not frozen. So what happens is all that water is running across the frozen soil, and then it hits that unfrozen soil, and down it goes. So you're going to have to talk to a good landscaper who can put enough of a drainage swale in that backyard to get even these February rainstorms around the house so they don't come up and hit the wall. The other solution is really expensive. You're basically looking at digging out soil and putting waterproofing in. And I would certainly start with the landscaping first. There are several people in Madison who do a very good job with drainage. You want to ask them if they know a lot about it. And choose somebody that is going to shoot things with a laser, figure out the scope, do a little topographical map, check it out yourself, make sure you've got a quarter inch per foot pitch, and then implement that and see if that helps.
All right. Does that help out?
Yes, thanks.
All right. Thank you for calling. And by the way, a caller asked, we couldn't hang on, but wanted the Educated Homeowner website again. He can't find it on Google.
Oh, well, it should be able to just, if you just type in educated homeowner, it should pop up. The other thing you can try is you can go to our corporate site, which is Freiberger Consulting, and they both end up in the same place on our webpage.
Okay, so Freiberger Consulting.
Consulting will also get you there. So Google search either of those, and it should be sure you don't put the educated homeowner, just educated homeowner, all one word, and it should pop up for you.
All right, there we go.
I tested it this morning.
Okay. Eric in Dubuque, Iowa, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I had some 18 by 18 inch porcelain tile put down about 3 years ago. Did it myself. And used a half inch trowel and put cement board down a quarter inch. Screwed it every 6 inches like it's recommended. And I have tiles coming up this last year popping right off the mortar base. And so I put some more down. And now, about 2 weeks ago, I had more of them pop up, the same ones I just put down. I was wondering what might be causing that, if you have maybe a solution for that.
Well, I can give you the most likely cause. There's a thing called the American Ceramic Tile Installer's Handbook, and it's going to tell you that with an 18 by 18 tile, you need what's called an index of deflection of L over 550. Okay, that doesn't mean anything, does it? What it really means is your floor is really, really stiff. If you're building a brand new house today, your index of deflection is L over 360. Now, what that means is that if you have a floor that is 15 feet wide, it will deflect a half inch in the middle and still meet code. So what is happening is the subfloor and the joists under your floor are deflecting enough, and you've got these 18-inch tiles, so they are popping loose because the floor underneath them is moving. So what you would have to do is you'd have to have somebody come in and engineer the floor and, like, add to the joists and things to stiffen them. You probably also are going to need a full inch, if not an inch and a quarter, of subflooring under a tile of that size. 18 by 18s are really unforgiving. I'm sorry to be so technical on that, but basically, the bigger the tile, the stiffer the floor we need.
Eric, does that help out?
Yes, it does. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Will in Verona. Hi, Will.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Here is my question. We're doing a kitchen remodel. And we've taken the exterior walls, which face north-northwest, down to the 2x4 studs. And it looks like OSB board is attached to them. And when we took them down, it was face batting that came down R13. And I'm wondering what John would recommend when we re-insulate. Because I heard earlier a call about something about now there's a paint that you can use for a vapor barrier. And could I paint it and then put in R13 face insulation again.
Well, what is the exterior of your house clad with?
It's, I believe it's a vinyl.
With vinyl. Okay, great. That's helpful. It isn't masonry. My favorite insulation is the two-part urethane spray. The nice thing about it is we get an air barrier. We have a vapor barrier. Plus, we're at like R6.2 per inch instead of R3, so we're going to get double the insulation. You said you're north and northwest, so that's the cold side of the house. I would at least get a price from a local contractor, and there are a whole bunch of them in Madison that do a good job on the two-part spray foam. It is going to be at least twice expensive of doing it yourself with the batting, but it may really give you a great product. One of the things is we don't know on the outside of the house is how good is the wind barrier. Unless you've had a 50 Pascal depressurization test on your house as part of an energy analysis, we don't know. So you've got at least three problems you can be solving just by using that one type of foam. So I would at least look into that. If not, then you're going to, if you do it with the bats, you're going to have to very carefully put in the interior vapor barrier as required by code.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Will. Thank you so much for calling. And Andy in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
I recently had some work done in my finished basement. We had a wall that was cracking. There was an expansion joint off in the concrete slab, so I had those carbon fiber armored strips installed.
Right.
And I used used a local contractor, and I was pretty displeased with the dust abatement. We have a false ceiling with fiberglass tiles, and I was expecting a lot more robust trapping in that dust. Luckily, I tested it, and there wasn't any lead paint there. But in my finished basement where my kids play and where we have our workout room, I've got a layer of dust everywhere, both on below the false ceiling and up in the false ceiling with the tiles, and I'm trying to find a way to get rid of that. My thought was to rent an air compressor and a air scrubber and go up there with a respirator and just blow everything out and buy a air purifier for afterwards. And I was wondering if you had any recommendations or thoughts on that.
Andy, when was this concrete cutting done? What month of the year?
It was done a week and a half ago.
Okay. The contractor has an OSHA violation. The silicate rules came in either May 1st or June 1st. Silicate is really dangerous. They had all kinds of precautions that they were supposed to take. This is the contractor's problem, not yours. And we don't want to get in there with an air compressor and blow the stuff in the air. What we really need to do is we need to be coming in there in HEPA vacuuming and wet wiping. And I think that what you need to do is probably take a look online, Google Wisconsin Right to Cure. This basically tells you how to write a letter to the contractor saying, here's what you did wrong. I've got this mess. It needs to be cleaned up. They have, I think, 15 days to reply to you. But basically, this is a way of giving a legal notice to the contractor without hiring an attorney. But they probably endangered their workers as well as your family by not following the OSHA silicate rules. So, and the contractor may come in and say, Andy, we're really sorry. We'll be there next week. We're going to get this done, or we're going to send in a professional cleaning crew. But you have this was done in error. This is a breach of contract. It's a breach of OSHA, and you should have recourse by going to the contractor.
There you go. And where does he go again for that letter?
Just go online. And anybody who has problems with a contractor in Wisconsin, you cannot sue them unless you give them the right to cure. Because most contractors are going to say, I want to come in and fix that for you. So Google Wisconsin Right to Cure. There is a nice brochure that I'm not sure what department it is in the state, puts it out. But it is all extremely clear. You can cite the statute. Basically, it tells you how to write the letter. The contractor has X days to reply. I can't remember them. Mm-hmm. Then you can determine whether their cure is. Is it a good cure or not cure? Reply to them. But it gives you a way of communicating with people that is legally formatted, no angry phone calls. Keep it all in writing. And in most cases, the contractors go, okay, we've breached the contract. We need to come and take care of this.
All right. There you go, Andy. Thank you very much for calling. And Jackie in La Crosse, it's your turn.
Hi, my husband and I are thinking about building a pole building home, and those are like on a heated slab. Just wondering what your opinion is on those.
Oh, basically you're going back in time, aren't you? You're doing timber framing. the problems that we have with modern pole buildings is you are probably going to be using treated wood, and it is going to move. And it's going to move for probably 5, 6, 7 years. So you end up putting up these nice 8x8 posts, which are structurally just great, and then you put studs between them, and then the blasted things twist a full inch and start making a mess of things. So I would be extremely careful about doing pole construction. In fact, I would probably just plain avoid it. You have to, if it's going into the soil, if that's the foundation, then you have simply a slab. If you want to use a slab, let's just use an engineered slab. Let's use a floating slab with a thickened edge with good insulation around it, and then we're going to just build on top of that slab.
Are you talking about going to a regular frame timber home?
Yes.
Rather than the pole building?
Oh. Right. Yep. But because what you're trying to save some money on is you don't want to dig this big hole, right? You have no need for a basement. You don't want to put in frost walls. What you want to do is you want to pour a slab. Well, a slab can be structural. You need an engineer architect to design it for you. There is a whole handbook from the Civil Engineers Society about how you isolate them thermally because you're up in a fairly cold area. So there's slabs on grade with the thickened edges work very, very well. So why don't you go that way instead?
Yeah. Something to really consider, Jackie, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Connie in Antioch, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Back in May, we had a hailstorm here in the Antioch area, and my home was damaged. My insurance company is amenable to replacing the siding with what is currently on the house, which is, there's some debate whether it's aluminum siding or steel siding. This comes from my contractor, or vinyl siding. And I'd like to know if your guest has an opinion on which would be preferable.
I really don't. Take a magnet. It doesn't stick to aluminum. It does to steel. That's going to tell you very quickly. Steel siding is going to be more expensive. So let's hope the magnet sticks, because then you're getting a little bit more money. Connie, what I focus on when people are siding houses, I don't care what the siding is. What I want to make sure is the subject of the program today is that we've got a drainage plane, we've got an air barrier, and then we can put this new siding, whether it's vinyl, whether it's aluminum, whether it's steel, whether it's hardy plank, whether it's LP smart side or whatever, over it. But let's make very sure that we have the drainage plane, the air barrier, and those sorts of things done. The other thing to think about on your house is, what is your wall insulation? If it isn't real good, we can add another inch of foam to the exterior of that house. So think of the wall system as a system, and then whatever you fix, whatever you select for siding, is going to be what you think looks good.
No.
And the siding's going to work, because what we have is the backup wall with the drainage plane. Is we're keeping the water out of the house, we're keeping the wind out of the house, we're keeping the cold out of the house.
So get your magnet out.
Get the magnet out, see what you have. Let's hope it's steel, because it's more expensive. And then give some thought to the entire wall assembly.
There you go. Thank you so much. Linda emailed to say she's building on a slab foundation, and they suggest a 2-inch foam under concrete. She's heard 4 inches is better. Also, what kind of foam should she use?
Well, again, we need to make sure that we have a closed cell foam. And there is a standard in the Uniform Dwelling Code, which I'm sure the builder is going to follow. But remember, the Uniform Dwelling Code gives us the information on how to build the worst legal house in Wisconsin. So foam is fairly cheap compared to energy costs, especially if this is going to be like a hydronically heated slab or something like that. So I would certainly go with 4 inches of foam to try to keep that slab warmer. And then you can look at the civil engineering handbook to see how you run foam on the exterior of this slab to make sure that it is isolated on all exterior sides.
There you go. And on that note, again, that website, go to Educated Homeowner.
Educated Homeowner?
All one word.
Right, all one word. And that should get you to our library. And if it's not in the library, you'll find an email contact, and you can request information. We will find it for you. Like, I am going to research deck paints, and we are going to constantly add to that so that our listeners have a resource they can use.
Well, John, thank you so much for Educated Homeowner, and thank you so much for being with us. You're back October 11th. We'll do it all over again. John Freiberger, the Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. His business firm is Freiberger and Associates. Always great to have him come by, and he'll be back on October 11th. Do it all over again. Mark Dwyer joins us tomorrow from the Janesville Rotary Garden, and we'll talk about late season gardening. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Net.